Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
Michael K. with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg. Hope you're all doing well. Hope you all had a good weekend with your family and friends, and hope that you're healthy and happy and safe. We go through these times of uncertainty, and with the death toll numbers rising every single day, although there was some good news in New York that the death toll yesterday was actually lower than it had been the day before. Still, the people that lost people don't look at it as a lowering at all. It's a heart-wrenching situation. But I thought Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post just wrote a beautiful column today. The Post back page was about one of their own passing away from the coronavirus, and that's Anthony Cowsey. Their brilliant photographer dies at the age of 48 after a long battle with COVID-19, leaves behind two very young children and a wife. I did not know Anthony very well. When I would see him, he was always friendly and had a smile for everyone. But when you read the amount of love pouring out from people, grizzled people in the sports industry that don't show this kind of emotion, you know what this man meant to so many people. Derek Jeter on Instagram, remarked about Anthony's passing, and Jorge Posada and Noah Syndergaard. I mean, people that just, I mean, their interaction with the media is totally businesslike. And this guy seemed like he had a way about him. Anthony had a way about him that put people at ease. And he was a brilliant photographer. And he was also very well known that if you were there and even if you were working for a competing newspaper and he got a good picture of you talking to someone, or if you were there with your family, he would tell you to stop. He'd unload his equipment and just start taking pictures. And then he brought you the pictures. He did that with players. He brought that with members of the media. He was a good, good man who fought a valiant fight. But now, as Mike Vaccaro said in his column, you put a face to a number, and you put a name to a number, and a face and a name that people cared about. So this virus rages on, and it certainly makes you wonder, how do people handle this? How do people handle it when it strikes so close to home? And for many in my industry and Don and Peter's industry today, this struck home. It really did. So rest in peace to Anthony. And our hearts go out to his wife and his two young children, who will never get a chance to get their father's guidance and love as they move into ages where they could better understand it. So just an awful, awful loss today. And it's just one of many, but this is one that we could put a name and a face to.
671 yesterday, which is an improvement from where we were last week. But as Governor Cuomo said today, I mean, you could say the numbers are better, but when you're talking about 671 people dying on Easter Sunday,
right?
The fact that we're used to that is insane. And just one thing to add to it for people who may not know, because Anthony, he has a lot of famous photos. But the one that Jeter posted among his most famous is Jeter throwing his hand up and touching the "I want to thank the good Lord for making me a Yankee" sign. But he's got so many brilliant photos.
And you've all seen this photo, the iconic photo taken from the bullpen when Mariano left the bullpen and entered the game for the final time in his career. Yeah. That's Anthony's photo.
Yeah, the one that I liked the most was Eli hugging his daughter, final game at MetLife. He was just... reading articles, he always put himself in the perfect situation, which is what photographers are supposed to do, because those moments don't happen on accident, right?
He worked hard.
And work really to get in the right position for those. And if you're like me or Michael that did not know him at all, one of the best tributes I saw last night was from Bruce Beck on NBC's 4. So I'm sure you can find it on Twitter.
We're going to have Bruce on, Don, at 3:45, because that really moved me.
Yeah, that was... that was amazing. He almost couldn't get through it. So that really put, a perspective on just how important he was to people.
It's just, again, I can't emphasize enough, this is not a business where a lot of emotion is showed. Because when athletes show emotion like this, I think they almost perceive it as weakness. And some of the people in our business, the grizzled veterans that have been in it forever, they don't show that emotion either. But Mike Vaccaro, again, I mentioned him because he wrote the column in the Post. He said, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to write because it struck so close and so close to home for people because it was somebody they knew and loved and meant a lot to a lot of people. And just the thing that meant the most to them, not was what he could do for you, but because he was so friendly and kind and always had time for people. And, you know, he just wanted to make memories for people with his photos. And he certainly did about the two photos that we spoke about. And, you know, he gained the trust of Yoenis Céspedes. And, you know, he was the one who took all the pictures of Yoenis in the cowboy hat on his ranch. You know, you just don't get players to trust you like that. But Anthony Cousy did. So, you know, again, rest in peace. After all these stories, I wish I had known you better. I'm usually up in the booth, and Anthony was down around the field level. But those that were close to him, you know, they are devastated today. So we certainly send out our love to them and thoughts. It's just an awful time. Awful time. Now, Peter referenced Governor Cuomo, who said something today that can hearten us just a bit, where he said that we have seen the worst of times. So the curve is starting to head down. Doesn't mean we're out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, but ICU admittance and death tolls are going down. So the governor said that we have probably seen the worst of it, but it could rear its ugly head again. That's what we have to be careful about when we start to think about restarting business and things like that. And the governors are talking about that, and the president is talking about that as well. And we want to get back to normal as soon as possible. We don't want to get back to normal at the price of losing more lives. So Donald Trump said over the weekend, it's the hardest decision I'm ever going to have to make. And I hope to God that I make the right decision. You know, nobody's all knowing in this. I mean, you can only take the advice from the best people and hope that you make the right call.
Yeah. And to attach it to sports, Michael, he it was kind of heartening as well to see that there was that conference call about an hour ago where Cuomo got to the governors of New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, Pennsylvania together, because they want to coordinate all of these adjacent states, because a lot of them do have people to commute into Manhattan, out of Manhattan. And the Connecticut governor talked about how a lot of their people have tested positive along that 95 corridor, so close to New York, and just their plan on trying to restart. And Governor Cuomo talked about how it's like opening a valve. You got to do it very, very slowly. And then you test and you see if more people are getting infected, then maybe you've got to slowly dial it back down. And I'm thinking that way for sports too, Michael, is that these commissioners have to decide when to start things back up again. But they might not have the luxury of just jumping right into the pool in the deep end and start as if nothing happened. You know, it might have to be a slow process, like what baseball's maybe thinking about in Florida and Arizona, and what the NHL's thinking about in North Dakota, and what the NBA might be thinking about in Vegas. That it just has to be very slow and just kind of stay the course, because you can't just jump right back into normal, right? Because then we could just end up wasting the month that we've spent trying to get everything dialed back down again.
And I did yesterday the unthinkable, what I've heard people mention doing, but most people are smart enough to not do it, and I'm not. I watched the movie Contagion yesterday.
Why would you do that? Outbreak is another one. I don't know if we'll ever be able to watch those movies.
So Contagion, first of all, very good movie. I didn't realize how good a movie it was and how star-studded the cast was, but it is not like it's similar to this. It's like they knew exactly what would happen, and smart people have already been able to understand every detail about how this would play out. I can't even explain to you the detail. Like, in the opening of the movie, they keep showing people who are coughing and sick, like, touching a doorknob. And it taps into the way we are all now programmed to think. Like, that's what the movie is. And the one thing about the movie that I found interesting was that I thought, wow, it's the exact same thing, except our situation hasn't gotten that bad. And then it really, I had pause, because I'm like, wait a second. Everything else in the movie was exactly accurate. So is it that that's not going to happen here, or that it's not going to happen if we make the right decisions? Because in the movie, 26 million people end up dying worldwide. And, you know, right now, what I think around 100,000 have died worldwide. So I say all of this to say, it scares me that when we hear the smallest bit of good news, you start hearing people talk about opening America back up and going back to work. And I don't know if you just saw this. China all of a sudden had a spike in their death toll yesterday for the first time in and in sick people for the first time in weeks. So my point is, we have to finish this out. We cannot jump the gun early. And it seems like in a lot of states, people are talking about sending people back to work right away.
That's frightening.
I heard I heard the Texas governor really wants to get back to work. I looked at the Texas map. Michael, it's every county in the whole state is affected by it.
Yeah, I think the decision's going to come down to, not to become too political, is, you know, the economy or the lives of people. And I'd rather the economy is going to be in trouble even if we get back. The economy has been really harmed. We'll come back. It always does. And it might take a while. But I'd rather not lose the lives. It seems like people are willing to lose more lives just to restart the economy. Well, if you restart the economy, then it's going to spike again. But I'm not an expert, so I will leave it to the hands of the expert.
Well, look, we're fortunate enough we're able to continue to do this show from home. A lot of people are able to work from home. And I just wonder if that happens where, hey, listen, you can come back to work. Will people want to? If they're given the option, Michael, right now of, we can go back to the city, continue to do the show from here. But if you want to do it from home, you can do it from home. A lot of people will be like, you know, I'm still going to do it from home. You know, I don't want to take the chance. And that's what's scary about just sports in general, too, is when the all clear happens and you can go back to Yankee Stadium and Citi Field and MetLife Stadium, are people going to want to go right away? Or are they going to be apprehensive and not sure? So we could be a long ways away when we talk about normal. I'm not sure they'll ever be the same normal that we were used to. But even when it all clear happens, will people be anxious to jump right back into the lives that they knew before this all happened?
Now, you mentioned sports, and there's very little on TV. You could find a football game yesterday, and, you know, the Giants' great Super Bowl win over the undefeated Patriots was on Fox 5. I'm very curious to see what the ratings for that happened to be, because I was riveted. And then later on NBC Sports Network, it was a Jet game right after 9/11 that Peter and Andrew were watching. They said that was a great game as well. And, you know, people are trying to get creative. And our very own company put on a horse tournament, you know, the shooting tournament in basketball. And although it's a valiant try, and you have to appreciate the initiative, I got to be honest, I couldn't watch for very long. It was amateurish. It didn't seem like it was anything that I'd want to sit there and, you know, give 2.5 hours of my life to. I'd rather read. Again, a lot of it's being shot from cell phones, and it looked like that. It looked like that. So I got to congratulate the company and the NBA players and the WNBA players on the mm-hmm. initiative, but I didn't think it was very good. I don't know how you guys felt. I just I thought that the play wasn't good. You could see that they were out of shape. You could see that their shots weren't there, and it was just grainy. It was not, to me, it wasn't an enjoyable watch. I don't know if either Don or Peter saw it, but I did not enjoy consuming that. It wasn't something I thought. I bet you that didn't get great ratings, because I don't know how long you could hang with something like that.
Yeah, it just, from a technical standpoint, which you understand, because we're seeing it all over, right? But there are other things that you're competing against, right? As much as we love sports, Michael, there's other things going on. So it's not like there's nothing, so let's do this horse because there's literally nothing else. You still have competition. You know, I looked at what happened. I don't know if you guys watched Saturday Night Live.
I did.
I thought it was terrific, considering the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't. I thought it was bad.
But under the circumstances, I found it. I found some things funny. Some things weren't funny, but from a technical standpoint, I think it worked.
Technically, I thought it worked. I didn't think it was funny.
But that's always going to be subjective, right? Just like the horse thing. Yeah, guys are going to miss their shots. But I think if we were able to see it crystal clear, we probably would have
helped.
Just a different vibe about it.
Yeah.
Right. I thought I really enjoyed Weekend Update. I thought that was hilarious, and there were some things that I thought missed, just like any other Saturday Night Live. But I didn't view it, Peter, the fact that it was from social distancing or that it was all being done by, you know, FaceTime or Skype or Zoom or whatever. That didn't bother me, because I thought from a technical standpoint it worked.
I think you're 100%. I think you just tapped into something really important. SNL did a really good job meshing everyone's different ability to get their stuff shot, and they made it work in a way that that made sense. Even Weekend Update, they had the the cast sitting on like Zoom, so you could hear laughs. I thought all of that was well done. I only really enjoyed the Tom Hanks monologue, and then I thought the show really fell off a cliff humor-wise. And I'm surprised you mentioned Update. I thought Colin Jost was so stiff. It was like they took him out of a room and he didn't know how to do the show anymore.
I don't agree. I mean, I think he's always like that at the desk. That's his act.
But,
he's the perfect guy.
He wasn't doing his regular act. He looked terrified to me. I don't know. I did not like the show.
I thought the joke swap was hilarious too. And I thought they made it work. It's obviously subjective, but I didn't think anybody could walk away from it saying from a technical standpoint.
No, I agree.
I couldn't watch it. All right. So it just held up on its own merits as far as the humor is concerned. And that's like anything else, like whether it's Jimmy Fallon or whether it's Jimmy Kimmel, they're all doing it from home. Some jokes hit, some jokes miss. But for the most part, technically, it has worked. I think the iRacing has worked, where it seems to really have gotten people excited about watching auto racing, if that's your thing. The problem with last night is if you're a basketball fan, I think from a technical standpoint, it was too poor to get over.
Yeah,
and I think that really just ended up being the misstep. If they had waited a week or two, would it have been different? I don't know. But you just can't throw it on as if you don't have competition. You do have competition, and if technically it's not working, people are going to find something else to watch.
Speaking of iRacing, Kyle Larson suspended indefinitely for using a racial slur on a live stream during a virtual race.
That's good. Well done.
He used the N-word.
Wow.
He apologized. Quote, I made a mistake and said the word that should never, ever be said. Sal, now, let me stop right there. Believe me, I'm not part of politically correct police. That's a word that shouldn't be used. But when you say that should never be used, you can't tell me that time on a live stream of an iRace was the first time that ever came out of your mouth. Doesn't that seem a little bit odd that's the only time in your life you've ever said that word?
Yep. It struck him in that moment. Only on the live stream. Not because he says it all the time and it slipped. Oh, my God.
There is no excuse for that. He said, I wasn't raised that way. It's just an awful thing to
really?
Say.
Really?
But you said it.
You said it.
Come on.
So, it just say like they say, never say anything in front of any microphone. You never know if it's on. But you're still responsible for the things that you say. You still said it. But here's the great thing about auto racing. When you talk about suspensions, and he's been suspended, I think it's like for three, if you want to call them races, the iRacing that's going on. But there was a situation, I think, earlier where Bubba Wallace had like a rage moment where he had a fit and he lost his sponsor. See, that's the thing is that, you can get suspended or fined or whatever. These drivers can lose their sponsor, Peter, and that kind of puts them out of a job.
Yeah.
So like Blue Emu, which was the sponsor for Bubba Wallace, he lost his sponsor. So that means you lose your ride.
And Larson's sponsors include McDonald's, Credit One Bank, Chevrolet.
Good luck getting forgiveness from them.
Yeah, he just happened to blurt that word. Never before, ever. I've never said that. if you ever heard me say that, I think you'd be shocked if you ever heard me say it, because I don't use that word ever in my life.
I mean, I've known you for 20 years.
When we're off the air, we say some pretty offensive things. No one's ever heard me say that word, because you know what? It's not in my vocabulary.
Right.
I think if you blurt it out, it has to be in your vocabulary.
Has to be.
Hey,
it doesn't
Michael,
slip for the first time ever.
We have all said some pretty raw things off the air.
Raw.
And I will admit to you that whenever something raw is said, I think the person that said it really believes that. And that's kind of like what they, and the same for me. And I'm comfortable with that. The only reason we don't say it on the air is because we'll get fined or lose our jobs from an FCC standpoint because it'd be a violation of certain words you're not supposed to say.
Right.
But as far as like
what the content is,
the content of it is, this is not an F-bomb. Okay. This is not slipping like a word you're not supposed to say, like the seven dirty words. This is a word that kind of cuts to the core of the person that's saying it.
I got to go. I got to see if I can find the video of this.
People are strange. People are really strange.
But that's what happens. But you see, that's the competitiveness, Michael. That's what's crazy, right? Is that there's probably no more of a revealing moment than anger. Like when somebody is really pitching a fit, right? Where they just, they're so into this. And I'm sure these drivers that are doing the racing, and even yesterday with the horse, you get competitive, you get into it. And sometimes that kind of reveals the soul of the competitor, right? That that's the word that happens to just drop out of your mouth in a fit of anger.
Now, we started this talking about Anthony Causey, and you know, he has two very young children and a wife that he left behind. And there's a GoFundMe page to help out the family, which is being organized by Amanda Vitale. So if you go to GoFundMe, it says snapshot some above prayers for the Causeys. And they've already raised over $83,000 with a goal of $150,000.
Wow.
Again, they're very young children that he left behind, and it's heartbreaking. It really is. So if you can, these times are tough, so you can't very well expect people to donate to every cause that's worthy. Every cause is worthy in its own right. But if you have some disposable income and you want to do that, it would be for a good cause. And we will talk to Bruce Beck at 3:45 because, as we mentioned yesterday, you know, he had a very difficult time getting through it because he didn't just know Anthony. He was very close with him. And you could see that that came across as Bruce had a very difficult time getting through the end of the obituary they essentially wrote for Anthony.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. The Michael K. Show.
The Post back page was about one of their own passing away from the coronavirus, and that's Anthony Causey. Their brilliant photographer dies at the age of 48 after a long battle with COVID-19. Leaves behind two very young children and a wife. My good friend Bruce Beck of NBC4. I wanted to serve Anthony's memory in the proper way and have Bruce on.
He was a special guy. He was New York through and through. He was the classic quintessential New Yorker, taking photographs for anybody who wanted to, and he was great at his craft and driven to be the best. These things have their ebbs and flows. It was always an uphill fight. We were always hoping for a David Tyree catch during this whole thing. We were praying for a David Tyree catch that we never got.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. That was tough. So, from being sad, I wasn't going to talk about this today. I'm going to get people mad. I watched the Giants Super Bowl 42 win.
Can't believe you're doing it.
And
you're a real man.
This is the first time I ever got a chance to watch the broadcast because Don and I were together. You know, the off talk about owner's box with
Dan Snyder.
With Dan Snyder, where
the
he
cookie.
Shot me down when I offered him a cookie. That's where we were when this happened. And it was all happening in real time, obviously. So
where are the cookies?
We could not really. I mean, we're watching it unfold, but we're not really. I don't know how best to put this. We're not really analyzing everything that's going on. So yesterday, watching that game was the first time I'd ever watched the game. And Eli has gone down in NFL lore as having one of the great comebacks in NFL history. And, you know, they pay on results. So he threw a touchdown pass to Plaxico Burress, and they won the Super Bowl. They beat a team that was 18-0. And he will. I think that that, and obviously the drive in the next Super Bowl that they played against the Patriots, I think firmly ensconces Eli Manning into the halls of Canton, Ohio at the Football Hall of Fame. But watching that final drive, I was incredibly lukewarm on his performance. I felt that there were so many things that he did wrong. There were so many near misses. And I was talking to a friend about it via text yesterday, and he said, but the greatest thing he did was stay on his feet. And I agree. That's what made the catch with Tyree all the more remarkable, because he got out of what was a lot of trouble. But there were at least, I think Peter counted up differently, there were at least two to three passes that could have been intercepted.
I had it four or five.
You had four or five, and I didn't see that.
So four or five in that drive could have been intercepted? Come on.
Four or five in that drive alone.
Come on.
Then he also made
three that hit defenders' hands, square in the hands.
No.
And then.
Yes. I watched the entire drive. three balls hit defenders in the hands.
Well, now and it's then three. Then it was four. Then it's five.
Make four. It was three.
No. Don, hold on.
You said, four or five. Now it's
four.
Three.
Or five could have been picked. Three hit defenders in the hands.
Well, one of them was Burris's hands. It was a play that was incomplete.
No. It all. Okay.
Go ahead.
Then, the Samuel one is the only one that you could honestly
one's absurd.
Should have been picked. But I do think that's a bit of an exaggeration. He was close to the line. He might have come down out of bounds.
Are you kidding me, Don? Are you out of your mind?
No.
The Samuel ball? He was waiting. He just dropped it.
It wasn't a drop. It was
yes,
high.
It was.
It would have been a nice catch.
No.
That's why he's a defensive back.
The Asante Samuel ball, it was literally
that was
just,
the
it
only
was a punt.
One. Again, I said should have. He should have probably made the interception. But
and
that's
then,
the only
then
one.
There was the scramble to the right side where he lost the ball. Now, in replay, you can see his elbow was down, but he did lose the ball. I don't want to say he was terrible because that would be sacrilegious, but I was underwhelmed, Don, because in real time, I was blown away by what he did. But in watching it last night, I was underwhelmed. And the series before, the game would have ended. They would have never given New England the chance to get the ball back if he had connected with Burris. He overthrew him. That was a touchdown. Even Troy Aikman said it.
But it's incredible when it happens with this guy. Because, again, was he outstanding? Was he the reason? No, but I just don't understand when we talk about great moments in New York sports or we talk about Hall of Fame players, this seems to be the only guy that gets dissected in the negative. He has the only touchdown drive in the history of the Super Bowl in which a touchdown was needed to win, and we talk about how he was average on that drive. We don't do it with any other athlete. And as far as the play to Tyree, it's not just the fact that he was able to break loose. It was a good throw. I mean, it was high to his head, but it got to the wide receiver and put them in the position that they were in. Then he throws, I understand it's just a screen pass, but on a third down play to Smith to get the fresh set of downs that led to the game-winning touchdown pass to Burris. He was wide open, and that's a simple throw. But I don't know why we go out of our way to dissect in the negative.
But see, Michael, that's player and only
but God, that's unfair because you know how I feel about Eli Manning. First of all, I think he's a great man, and I think he's a Hall of Famer. All I'm saying is I watched that drive, and I was underwhelmed. He was not great on that drive. There are fourth quarter drives that you see people make that you're blown away. The precision. There was nothing precise about that drive. You could see it over and over and over again. The Tyree catch was lucky. That God was looking down on them and rooting for them. That was a fortunate play. And then he made bad passes a lot of the drive. I'm sorry. Again, I'm not saying he stunk, but underwhelmed is the best way I could put it. And the pass to Burris was probably the best one because he pump faked one way and then threw a perfect over-the-shoulder. It was a great play. That was a touchdown. But to get down there, there's no way. I know I didn't feel like this when I was watching. I was standing next to you. We were both kind of in awe of the thing unfolding in front of us. I never thought I was not underwhelmed as I was watching it live. Last night, I'm not looking to bash Eli Manning because I like him. I was underwhelmed.
It's not just you, Michael. It seems like everybody just tries to find something negative in like one of the greatest moments in franchise history. He threw for two touchdowns on 139 yards in the fourth quarter of that game, in his fourth year as a quarterback in the Super Bowl. And yet, the lasting memory is, it was a fluke play, he had a couple of bad passes, he should have thrown, he missed a wide-open receiver on the drive before. It just seems strange. And again, it's not just you, but everybody wants to painstakingly try
but the fact that, but
to
the,
devalue
the fact that
anything
me,
this guy's ever done.
But the fact that it's me, Don, would tell you that I'm not trying to devalue. I want to value this guy. I think the world of him. I thought that you... I think I've never ever thought that you were over the top with Eli, but to look at that drive and not be underwhelmed, I'm stunned. I really am.
But think about it.
Were going back and forth on a group text, and then Peter joined and said, "I want to watch it." And then
I was happy to disagree with either of you. I didn't care which side I came down on. I said, let me just go watch from beginning to end. And over the last year, I've become quite the Eli Hall of Fame defender. At every moment, I've thought about that he's a Hall of Famer. And I just was kind of blown away with what Mike, because I hadn't thought about it that way either. Because in the moment, of course, they came back, they won the game. But when you watch it from just like a quarterbacking performance, to call it crisp would be like an outright lie.
I never said that.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's awful, but it wasn't good.
There were certain things that were said on that text that ended up not really coming out, so I don't want anybody to have to own anything. But, you know, terrible is not a way to describe it, and I'm not going to say that he was John Elway in the drive either, all right? But I just don't know in that moment how that's the opinion you have on the, on a touchdown drive against the perfect team. I just, it's strange. I just don't know if any other
because the emotion's gone now.
The emotion is gone because I didn't think that 12 years ago when I stood shoulder to shoulder with you, we were both euphoric. We couldn't believe what we were watching. But in watching the broadcast for the first time, he was not good. He was not that great in that drive. I'm sorry. Well, now, I mean, the Manningham pass in the second Super Bowl, I thought he was phenomenal in that drive. Maybe the nerves were gone. Maybe he'd been there, done that. The Manningham pass to me is one of the greatest big game passes in football history. I mean, you had a thimble hole to throw it into, and he threw it into that. But there was none of that on that drive last night.
And by the way, there's another thing you didn't mention, Michael. In addition to the luck of the Tyree play, which is it's insanity, in addition to that, if Brandon Jacobs comes up 1 inch shorter on fourth down, that game's just over.
And that's another thing that
he didn't get anywhere.
The pass to Toomer was for 9 yards. It had to be for 10. Now, you can blame Toomer or blame Eli, but you can't throw for 9 yards there. And Brandon Jacobs just got the first down.
An inch. It's amazing. I'll just say this. If you want to look at it in a positive way, God wanted them to win that Super Bowl because the amount of breaks on that drive.
But that's any drive. There's always breaks. There's always things that kind of go your way, no? I mean, we celebrate. It wasn't a Buckner play that helped them keep the season alive. I mean, this is football. We can sit there. I just don't know why we have to make this effort all the time with him. Doesn't happen with anybody else.
But, Don, that's not what happened.
Well, you know,
Michael,
that base hit, you know, it could have been hit a lot crisper.
But
you
he
know,
happened boy, to be sitting just, home and see it. It just came on TV and it stood out.
Well, but I didn't look at it any differently than I looked at it at the time. I mean,
because
it was
I really
a drive
think
for
that
a touchdown.
You look at it, I don't mean this in a bad way, and this is one of the few things that you're still fans of. You looked at it through big blue glasses.
But
you
not,
looked at it
not,
for the result,
don't get me
which
wrong,
is the only
I'm not
thing
sitting
that matters.
Here and praising him and saying that it was the greatest drive of all time and that he was spectacular on the drive. He was very average on the drive.
I actually think he was below average.
But you make the Tyree play like a horseshoe fell out of his ass.
It was.
That's not how it happened.
It was. It totally did. First of all, you don't throw a ball like that for the middle of the field. That was total luck. The best part of that drive was Eli getting out of the grasp of the Patriots to live another day so to make that play possible. But throwing the ball blindly in the middle of the field is not a smart play.
It doesn't happen with anybody else. Again, I could sit here and we can praise Bill Parcells. Right? Everybody universally believes Bill Parcells is one of the greatest coaches of all time. All right? You can make the case that the 1990 Super Bowl was complete luck. The championship game, the game-winning field goal by Matt Barr, only happened because Roger Craig fumbled the ball. They were about to take a knee. They needed one more first down. Craig fumbled the football. Lawrence Taylor recovers it. If a Hall of Fame running back doesn't fumble the football, they don't get the ball back. They don't go to the Super Bowl. And then Norwood has to miss the field goal. But nobody sits there and dissects everything. It's just, unbelievable. Look at what the Giants were able to do. And Bill Belichick's game plan is in the Hall of Fame for the way he was able to shut down this juggernaut Buffalo Bills offense.
In fairness,
meanwhile,
though,
Norwood hits the field goal, and if Craig doesn't fumble the football, they're not even in the Super Bowl.
You'd have a kick. You would have a kick coming, Don, if it was a hater that was doing it. It's somebody who's the opposite of a hater.
I know, but you spent also a lot of time on the other side of trying. I'm not saying you hate him, and I'm not saying that Peter hates him. Okay, but I do think for some reason we feel like we've got to dissect him more than any other New York athlete. As if everybody else that is exalted, whether it's, you know, Derek Jeter or whoever we want to talk about, Joe Namath, blah, 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 all of them, we seem to spend more time on him and how it's not really as good as you think it is. It's good, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
But that's because it's who he is, though, Don. But that is who
really
he is.
We really need to dissect. So a guy that at the time, all right, the Montana never did it, Bradshaw never did it, Elway never did it, getting a touchdown when you needed the touchdown, and we're going to sit here and we're going to dissect that he was below average and lucky that it happened.
That's who Eli is. That's why people have the argument, because when his great moments happen, they're great, but you spent a lot of his career scratching your head. And I think what Michael pointed out here that's so interesting about this is, in what's considered one of the two greatest moments of his career, rewatching it without the emotion, you're still scratching your head. He threw the ball right to Asante Samuel. It was, if that actually caught, He might not have been the starter for the next Super Bowl. It was that bad a pass.
Don, I'll tell you, after watching that fourth quarter yesterday, and then you look at his stats, which were underwhelming, the defense was the MVP. To hold that offense, Tom Brady and Randy Moss, to 14 points, that the defense was the MVP of that.
They don't give the MVP to a defense. I mean,
you're right.
Yeah, listen, that has to happen. You're absolutely right. The pressure that they put on him was spectacular. But even that, you know, we've talked about it too, that how absolutely close, since you watched the game over again, was that completion to Moss?
Oh, it was amazing.
An inch.
Would have changed the football history.
They're in field goal range. They tie it. They go to overtime. Right? So there's always things that happen that kind of work out in every game. Even the blowouts, there's some moment that if things could have completely changed. Even the Giants Super Bowl where they were blown out by the Ravens, shouldn't even been in the game. There was the Jesse Armstead pick six early in the game that was the defensive hold. They called it back. They could completely change the complexion. There's always moments like that. I'm just curious to know why we always seem to have to try to find it with him.
Well, I don't try to find it. I just found
no,
it by I don't try to find
yes,
it. That's wrong. I just watched the game. I said, wow, he's not great in this drive. And a lot of people were watching that game. They must have gotten great ratings on Fox for that. But somebody texted me and said, wow, what an underwhelming call by Joe Buck on the Tyree catch. And my question would be, he didn't know who would even know what was happening there. You thought in real time, there's no way you could see that the ball was going to be caught or even was held on to.
I had seen it since then, you know, because they replayed it a bunch of times, and I have it on DVR, and I've seen it maybe 3-4 times since we saw it live.
Right.
But I remember how I felt live is that I just assumed, Michael, that replay was going to show that it touched the ground and it was going to be incomplete.
Me too.
I don't think anybody really felt like that play was going to stand. It was just – You can't describe it. It's just an unbelievable play that, yeah, sure, luck's involved. I mean, how you just try any athlete, you know, putting a football on the top of their helmet and falling flat on their back and still being able to maintain possession. You know, it's incredible. And but he's not known for if John Elway had done that or if Mahomes had done that, getting out of the grasp of the defenders of the New England Patriots wouldn't seem that big of a deal. But for Eli, who didn't have a lot of mobility, to be able to find the time. And there's a lot that goes into being a quarterback, the pressure of maybe changing plays of the line of scrimmage or knowing where certain guys are. Tom Brady has made a livelihood of completing passes. We talked about it last week, Peter, of completing to guys that are wide open. And a lot of that sometimes is the quarterback reading the defenses, knowing where to find guys that are open. So to be the quarterback of a game-winning drive like that, I mean, it takes a lot to be able to do.
For sure.
Yeah, he might have been average or whatever, but I'm not dissecting it to say that he was terrible or below average when you're able to accomplish something like that against an undefeated team that had the fourth best defense in football that year, knowing that a field goal wasn't going to do it. It's pretty great.
Well, the end result was great. I mean, it's like, don't tell me how you made the pancakes. Just make the pancakes. So he made the pancakes, but the process of making the pancakes was ugly. Because once he got down there, I think a lot of the you can't say a lot of the pressure was off because the field goal wouldn't have done anything. They were down by four. But the pass to Plaxico Burress to win it, that was brilliant. It was a brilliant play. But getting to that point, so much fortune fell in his favor, in the Giants' favor. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying that I'm the all-knowing, but my reaction and watching it for the first time on TV, wow, this is really underwhelming. Adam Schefter on ESPN reporting that Christian McCaffrey is about to sign a record-breaking extension, 4 years, averaging about $16 million per year, making him the highest-paid running back in the history of the NFL. All right, let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Rick in Long Island. Rick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my question, I just want to say, Mike, you know, you're the best in the business. And Don, you know, I'm a diehard Rangers fan. I really miss listening to your calls on the radio. You do an excellent job.
Thanks
man.
So I'm calling to make the argument against Eli being in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I won't even bring up the whole interceptions thing, which people like to bring up, because when you play a lot of games, you might just throw a lot of interceptions. But, you know, I think by two things that matter are your record and I think consistency. And Eli Manning was a 500 quarterback, and no one remembers Eli being consistently good in the NFL because he never was. And when you talk about the Hall of Fame, I think that you're devaluing what the Hall of Fame is and you're rewarding mediocrity by allowing
Eli to begin. You got to take Joe Namath out then. Joe Namath is not a Hall of Famer.
But Don, you know what?
He's not. By your standard, you know how many quarterbacks are now no longer in the Hall of Fame?
But Don, it's the Hall of Fame. It's supposed to be the best of the best.
You are entitled to have your opinion on what the Hall of Fame is supposed to be. Who else are you taking out? Because by your definition, there's a lot of guys that are not going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Eli, with no question, Eli was clutch when he needed to be when it comes to Super Bowls. You can never take that away from him. I just think that when you're looking at a guy who's played a whole lot of games and is one game over 500, he led the league in interceptions 3 times. I'm not talking about career interceptions, but you know he's had more down years than up years.
Rick, you cannot take away the 2 Super Bowls. You just can't cavalierly do it. He was a part of both of them and made great passes to win games. So I think that you pay off on the end result. The end result is how many championships do you have? And you also have to make the case that in the last 4 or 5 years of his career, did the Giants really put a lot of talent around him?
Yeah, see, that's where you get crazy. He's not a pitcher. And even in pitching in Major League Baseball, Michael, they have devalued the wins and losses.
Absolutely.
Because they understand that a pitcher isn't always responsible for the fact that the team won or lost. So why are we all of a sudden attaching it to a quarterback? There were a lot of lousy Giant teams, especially down the stretch of his career, that if he decided, like a Troy Aikman, to retire at 35, he might have finished 15, 20 games above 500, and then all of a sudden he's a Hall of Famer?
Let's go to Ali and Roselle. Ali.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I appreciate y'all keeping us entertained through all this madness.
You got it.
I just want to the cowboy hater over there, I don't think he can reasonably be judicial when it comes to the Giants. I mean, I don't understand why we can give that same. I think he had two of the luckiest. I think the Giants organization altogether had three of the luckiest.
Who are you talking to, by the way? Who's the Cowboy fan?
I said Cowboy hater.
Who's the Cowboy hater? What do the Cowboys have anything to do with this conversation, by the way?
No, I'm saying just as you are with the Cowboys, where you look at everything from a negative perspective. When
give
it
me
comes
an example.
To the Giants.
Give me an
God.
Example.
I can give you a bunch of them. Let's
go
start
ahead.
With Jerry Jones. Let's start with Jerry Jones.
Because he's a horrible human being. That has nothing to do with me hating on the Cowboys.
He's a horrible, awful human being. And
yes.
How do you know that?
Because Dan Reeves' contract, unceremoniously firing him, firing Jimmy Johnson because he couldn't take the fact that somebody was sharing the spotlight with him.
And
those are two examples right there.
That makes him.
If you're a Cowboys fan, you should hate the guy.
Oh no! How can I do that? We got 3 Super Bowls.
He's killing you. He is destroying your organization by being the general manager. He's an awful general manager. You should hate his guts.
I don't.
Go on. What another example? I won that one, so give me another example.
No, I don't agree that you won that one.
Give me another example. I'm supposed to hate them. I'm a Giant fan, but how do the Cowboys relate to this conversation in Eli?
The Cowboys relate to this. Well, it does. It flips to the Giants, where you can't see reasonably that Eli Manning was an average quarterback who, I agree with Mike on this one, that play was absolutely luck. He was terrible that whole drive. And I don't think that I think you give him way too much credit for
what happened in the other Super Bowl.
What
was fluky about that Super Bowl?
It wasn't. Well, just getting to that Super Bowl was fluky. Let's talk about the Manningham catch. I mean, the Manningham throw that he couldn't make that throw if he tried.
Well, he made the throw.
Yeah, but he made it.
He made the throw.
Ollie, that's not fair. He made it. He made it.
How are you going to feel when this call is over? This is a weak, man. This is weak. This is weak sauce, man.
I mean, you could say over and over, he'll never make that play 1,000 times. You know what? He made it in the most important time in his life.
Made it in the Super Bowl.
This is one of the biggest big plays in sports history. Take a look at that play. It's the most exquisite throw you'll ever see.
Yeah,
under the most trying times. You can't say he can never do it again. He doesn't have to do it again.
So
that's a dumb comeback.
Who's being biased? I'm Mr. Cowboy hater.
He's being biased. He was being biased.
Thank you. Awful call. Should be embarrassed.
But, Michael, you did also accuse Don of looking at this through big blue lenses.
Yeah. Because he the beauty of Don, as we know, you don't win an argument with him.
But
he won't budge. He's not budging on it.
But you said big blue glasses. I never said he was terrific on the drive.
But you're saying that I was looking, I'm looking to find something bad about him, which is so totally not true.
But not just you. I think everybody does. It's amazing to me. It would be like looking back. I'm just trying to find an example off the top of my head of, like, you know, a great moment in Yankee history, and just say, ah, you know, he kind of hit it off the end of the bat. He was lucky to make contact.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you say that the Jeffrey Mayer thing, that Jeter was lucky to get a home run there? I mean, we could all be honest.
I would say that.
Okay, you know, so that's a perfect example.
But, you know, nobody's talking about, like, looking back at the 96 team and saying that team was lucky that they won the championship.
But the thing that made Eli shine in everybody's eyes were the two drives in the Super Bowl. And I'm saying the drive in Super Bowl 42 was below pedestrian. That's all.
But it's just odd to me that he still got a touchdown. He threw a touchdown pass. Nobody has ever done that before in the history of football. Yeah, there was a couple of fortunate things that went his way. And again, I'm not going to say that it was John Elway's drive, that it was, like, all him. But, you know, saying that he was terrible, like the caller just said, Peter's saying there was 4 or 5 times he could have been intercepted. Why do people exaggerate to make a point?
Why don't the three of us one day on the show, when we return to normal, we're all in the studio, go over the fourth drive together.
We could do it right now. It'd be very easy.
No, but I'll tell you
the exact point to start on the YouTube clip, and everyone could watch it. The drive is Don. There are a few plays that you're forgetting about that, while you could be like, oh, that's not the worst thing in the world. Early on, there's another overthrow in the middle of the field that is just an interception 40% of the time. And that's part of the thing I think that I don't understand about what you don't understand is, you have to, the way the rest of the world sees Eli is as an enigma. He has moments when he's great and moments when he just, you're like, does this guy know what he's doing? And I think it's interesting that even in this great moment, with some room to look back at it, it's still a very mixed bag, the performance.
And that's fine, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. It's interesting to me that it only happens with him.
But it's him. That's him.
You can't do it with
Derek Jeter.
Since I'm this Cowboy hater, go back and look at Troy Aikman's stats. Troy Aikman was a good quarterback, but his stats show that they weren't overwhelming. Come on, he had a Hall of Fame running back, a Hall of Fame wide receiver, Hall of Fame center, Hall of Fame tackle. He was on a great team, but nobody sits there and analyzes, boy, Troy Aikman was lucky to be on that team. If he was a Jaguar, he'd never make it. No, he's a Hall of Famer, and he deserves to be. But for some reason, Eli gets dissected more than any other quarterback.
I think that reason is because he's closer to average than those quarterbacks. Troy Aikman was better than Eli Manning. I don't care what the stats tell you. If you watched games, watching his entire career, there were so many times when I watched Eli and thought, what is he doing?
For more than 80 years, Nissan has been there for you. And now is no different. We're offering flexible payment options for current NMAC customers. Our service departments are here to help. And for future owners, we're now offering more help. Deferred payments for 3 months on 11 models. Plus, we'll cover your payments for up to 2 additional months. Plus, get 0% APR financing for up to 60 months on 10 models. This is help when you need it. Visit NissanUSA.com today to learn more. Nissan, innovation that excites. Offers available to well-qualified buyers on purchase of an eligible 2020 Nissan from new dealer stock when financed through Nissan Motor Acceptance Corporation. Subject to NMAC credit approval and max term limit. Subject to residency restrictions. NMAC special APR cash amount is capped and varies by vehicle from $500 to $2,000, which customer can apply toward up to 2 monthly payments. Customer is responsible for all payments. Delayed payment must begin 90 days from date of contract. Accrual of interest commences from contract date and consumer responsible for accrued interest. Dealer participation may vary. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer details, including list of eligible models and service availability. Offers end 6-120.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody! It's me! I'm back! And guess what? It's another Don segment!
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don!
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie!
All right, we were talking about Super Bowl 42. And one of the other takes that I had was seeing Jared Lorenzen celebrate.
I thought about that when I saw old Jared.
And obviously, you know,
he didn't get a chance to play. He was just a backup quarterback. But I kept thinking about how he had one of the great sports nicknames, the Pillsbury Throwboy. I always thought that was tremendous. So I thought, how about the top five New York nicknames, New York sports nicknames? Now, I've got some rules, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
It can't be some kind of offshoot of the name. Like, I will not accept A-Rod. I will not accept LT.
OBJ.
Like, to me, that's not really a nickname. Is that fair?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. And also a nickname given to you as a child. I want the nickname to be something that you did, something about your professional career. All right? So, like, Yogi Berra doesn't make it because Yogi was something he got when he was a young child. From a friend who thought he looked like a booty, like a yogi, a Buddha, like a yogi. So these are earned nicknames as a pro.
Want me to go?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think I've got your number one.
Let me do that one.
All right, what do you got? You go first.
No, go ahead.
Mr. October.
Mr. October, I have at number two. Now, obviously, we know why he's Mr. October because of, you know, three home runs and one in three swings and how big he was in October for the Yankees in 77 and 78 and all that. But what makes it so special, Michael, he refers to himself as Mr. October, which makes it just so special. You know, it's one thing to refer to yourself in the third person, but to be able to do it in nickname, I think it's unprecedented. So
yeah,
I've got it at number
Michael
two.
K hates when people refer to themselves in third person.
I've heard that.
And but to take it to Reggie's level, the Caster hates it.
The Caster hates it.
Right.
Good job, Michael.
I guess the Babe wouldn't be in here.
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. Because the Babe would fall under the characterization of it doesn't fit because he wasn't named it as a pro. It was actually a nickname that was given to him as a schoolboy because his teacher was also his baseball coach, and since he put him under his wing, the other students called him the teacher's Babe. But I'm going to give Peter number one because he went by other nicknames, including the best, the Bambino. Right? The curse of the Bambino. It's not the curse of the Babe. It's not the curse of Ruth. It's the Bambino. You can also go with the Sultan of SWAT. I mean, he was so big, he had so many nicknames, but I'm going to go with the Bambino, and I have it at number one because he's Ruth.
How about...
That's fair.
Probably number three on your list would be Clyde.
I thought about it, certainly.
Oh, wow. Not even there.
But I don't have him in the top five.
Oh!
Well, you didn't even hear the other three.
No, I don't care. Clyde is one of the most iconic nicknames of all time. There's even a shoe named after him.
It is true, and it's like it's a name, but it's not his name. It's amazing.
But does it? I'm a little ignorant on it because I wasn't going to put it in the top five. But what is the sports origin of Clyde?
It's just that he was cool. I think Bonnie and Clyde. It came from that Clyde Bowers.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, what a caveat you've added here that you have to have earned it during your career.
Yeah, because I think that really makes it special, no?
I need a ruling from you.
Yes.
There's a lot of guys in New York history that have gone by the Captain. Does that count?
No. I didn't because, Michael, the thing that's what's interesting about Derek, and obviously he was the leader on all those championship teams, right? But he became the captain in 2002.
Well, I mean, also Messier could be the captain.
They only won one championship with him technically as the captain of the team. And you're right. The captain is always kind of thrown out to somebody who was the captain. So it's good, but
I got one.
I don't think if you screamed out, hey, captain, Derek's not turning around.
Yeah, how about this?
Hey, Jeter.
How about this?
He might not turn around no matter what you do. Mr. Jeter, still not.
This is out of the, you know, go look at the old New York Post, although Kirby Puckett gets some credit from Donnie. Donnie Baseball.
Yeah, Donnie Baseball, I thought
that's
about
there.
That too.
That's
I just don't have him. Again, you don't even know the other three. Mattingly. Here's what I'll say. Mattingly, you have to think about it, and obviously you're the one that did it, Michael, so I understand that. But he's not as significant as the three guys that I have on the list.
Here's what I'd like to say, okay? Please let me finish. I don't know when he got this nickname, so I'm just throwing it out there. Doc.
I thought about Doc.
because that's crazy, right? You could actually refer to him as Doc Gooden. It's
a legit nickname
based on Dr. K, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't make the top five because he's not as good as the guys I've got on the list and their nicknames.
If this next guy's not on the list,
we end the segment.
I'm with Michael.
I'm done with you already today.
Okay.
Yes.
Broadway Joe.
Number three, of course. Right, it's probably one of the best nicknames as far as describing Joe Namath perfectly. Like, you could write a book to describe all of his exploits on and off the field, right? But Broadway Joe really, I think, capsulizes everything about the great Joe Namath. Broadway Joe is perfect. I've got it at three.
Let's see. I have a...
There's been like three or four times in which Michael has threatened to walk out, and he's nailed it all four or five times. So
that's a big moment. I thought my phone a friend here was going to give me one. I looked, and he had Dr. K.
I'll tell you what, this music is disconcerting. It's hard to think with this music. But it has to be played.
Hey, Michael, what's the absolute hockey one that there's going to be?
I'm trying to think.
Don't go crazy.
The King.
I thought about the great one, but he didn't spend enough time in New York.
How about the King for Henry?
No. He's not as good as these two iconic players.
Are they hockey players?
No.
So no hockey.
Are they baseball players?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Terrific Tom. Tom Terrific.
Tom Terrific, number five. Good job.
The most repugnant nickname of all time. I hate that name.
Wait a minute. You said it can't be any kind of thing involving the name.
No, but he's terrific.
If his name was Ed, it would be Terrific Ed.
No, he's terrific.
But his nickname's not Terrific. It's Tom Terrific.
No, it's not. When I said name, A-Rod, LT, that's just taking his name, but Terrific.
They added the Terrific.
Because of how terrific a pitcher he was.
I know how great he was, but I believe Doc should be in there for nickname over Tom Terrific.
No.
Because he's literally
Brady tried to get Tom Terrific, and remember how he was destroyed.
But people,
he's not Seaver.
I personally, if I was to mention Gooden in a conversation, would refer to him only as Doc Gooden.
And you could say Tom Terrific, and everybody's going to know who you're talking about. Am I wrong, Mike?
But it is a derivation of his name.
But that's not in the spirit of the rule. The spirit of the rule is, A-Rod. A-Rod's a tremendous player. Even take away the steroid, but he's just shortening his name. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm not saying you're wrong with this is your game. These are your parameters. But if his name was Billy, it wouldn't be Billy Terrific.
I love Bill Terrific.
But it's not in the spirit of the rule.
Okay.
So you had Tom Seaver and weren't going to say it because
Quick doesn't work either, because if his name was Billy, it wouldn't be Billy the Quick.
What are you saying?
I don't know. Let's just move on. Okay, so there's another baseball one we're forgetting.
Yes.
Is it in the Bronx or Queens?
It's in the Bronx.
And I'm forgetting it.
Wow.
I guess, because you haven't said it.
The Iron Man.
The Iron Horse.
For that reason, I didn't have it in the top five because I figured Peter would know because he broke Cal Ripken's record, but
it was the Iron Horse. That's the problem. I didn't even remember.
The Iron Horse. Cal Ripken broke his record. But ironically, and I learned this doing the investigating because I really almost had it in the top five, is that he was just named after because Native Americans had always called a train the Iron Horse. And he was built like a train. So it really wasn't from the fact that he played all the time. It was kind of his build. That's where he got the nickname the Iron Horse.
How about Digger Phelps?
Come on, Michael, really?
He went to funeral school before he became the coach of Fordham. That's
but
how
we
he
just
became
said
Digger
that
Phelps.
It's great baseball name. and it's in the Bronx.
I got it. The end of the game. Scooter Rizzuto.
No.
Ah!
You're disgusted, aren't you?
He could be as I want him to walk off and then have to come back with his tail between his legs, humbled, when he hears the guy that I have it for.
How about this? I got it. The chairman of the board, Whitey Ford.
No, this guy's better.
Oh, my God.
He is just going to be so embarrassed. Because this guy is bigger than Whitey. He's bigger than Rizzuto. We can't use
bigger
the Mick.
Bigger than Whitey and Rizzuto.
Yes.
And Yogi.
Yes.
And you got Joe D. You're not going to use that. How about the Yankee Clipper, Joe D.?
That's right. Number four, the Yankee Clipper. Now, there's some kind of controversy on how he got to be the Yankee Clipper, Michael. What story did you hear?
I didn't hear a story.
All right.
He had someone clipped.
That it was Yankee Clipper because of the ship. But through my investigation, I had a couple of different sources that he was named. The Yankee stadium announcer was Arch McDonald, nicknamed him because of his speed and range was like the new Pan American airline that was launched. And that's why he was called the Yankee Clipper.
You know what? I think Scooter's bigger. I think chairman of the board is bigger.
All right. You be embarrassed then. Chairman
I'm not
of the board. But here's the problem with chairman of the board. It's a ripoff of Frank Sinatra.
I don't know. Wait, why did he become the chairman of the board very early? I don't know if Frank Sinatra was the chairman of the board until he got older. Frank Sinatra was not the chairman of the board when he was doing the Bobby Sox.
We could do the timeline. But if you say chairman of the board, you're going to think of Frank Sinatra.
Okay, how about Scooter?
He's not Joe DiMaggio.
Well, we're not saying the nickname. We're not saying
the Yankee
player.
Clipper.
They're both Hall of Famers.
You don't think the Yankee Clipper is a tremendous nickname?
It's a great nickname, but the nickname he goes by is Joe D, which you wouldn't allow in your game.
I can't allow it in the game, but he's the Yankee Clipper. And where did Scooter get his nickname?
I got to tell you.
Because he used to scoot around the infield.
Are you telling me Yankee Clipper is as synonymous with him as Doc is with Doc Gooden? Come on.
This is your worst list ever.
Well, really? I'll just throw it back at you. Okay, you might make the case that Doc Gooden is more affiliated to
Doc. Doc could be number one on that list. That's how good a nickname it is.
How about Sandman from Mariano?
My God. What about that?
So I've got Tom Seaver, Joe DiMaggio, Joe Namath, Reggie Jackson, and Babe Ruth.
But you're talking about the most famous players.
Right.
We're talking about the most famous nicknames.
Right.
But you're not. But the Yankee Clipper that is amazing. It stood the test of time. I can't believe I'm arguing Yankees with a Yankee guy. Enter Sandman's is a kind of a cool nickname, but is it really like that big of a nickname? Hey, here comes Enter Sandman.
Not
no,
Enter
you don't
Sandman,
say that.
Just Sandman.
No, nobody says here comes the Sandman. It's Mo. But Tom Terrific, the Yankee Clipper, Mr. October, Broadway Joe, the Bambino. Come on, guys.
I don't know.
I'm enjoying the list. I like the controversy.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. Two opponents enter.
I hate Don.
I'm Don LaGreca, sidekick to Michael K.
Only one makes it out.
Let's go with Don!
Who will win this daily competition where the standings don't matter?
What?
We find out.
Okay.
In the latest edition of Last One Standing.
Last one standing. It's time again. And before we start, Ryan Hurley checks in with a great call, Michael, about another big miss on Don's list.
Okay.
Now, this is going deep. This is thinking all the way through. But, Michael, where is Mike Tyson billed as being from?
Brownsville.
That's right. What's his nickname?
Iron Mike.
Is there a more synonymous nickname ever in sports? That's a tough one.
How about this one? A lot of people just tweeted me this, Louisiana Lightning.
Great nickname. You get a great pitcher, for sure. Who are you taking out?
All right, we got to move on to last one standing. And the score is 3-3 overall.
Do we have to continue to keep score? Isn't it just a fun little competition?
No, I love the score.
We should do it once a week.
Okay, fine. I'll update at the end of the week.
Unless I win today.
That's right. Michael, you're up first today?
Yeah, I won.
No, that's not how it works. Who was up first last time?
I went first, I believe.
On Friday? Okay. So, Kaster, you're up. You ready?
Wait. I don't know why the host of the show, Michael.
No, I should know. I don't know if you know, Don, there's a global pandemic, so our staff is way down here at Last One Standing.
Listen, I understand what's going on in the world, but I also understand that you're not as buttoned up as some.
How dare you? Oh, my God.
Brings up a good point.
Michael went first on Friday because he got asked the question, name the three outfielders in the starting lineup in 1996 on opening day. And then
got it wrong, then you got it wrong.
Right.
Correct.
So I go first.
So, Don, you're up first. Hey, Don, how are you?
Fantastic, honey.
Let's get started. Start nice and easy for Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
Don, tell me the last Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup.
Ooh. Montreal Canadiens, 1993. Final.
My God.
Isn't that an embarrassment for the sport or for the country?
It's 93, hockey, man.
That's 27 years.
Right, but they've...
I would love being Canadian.
They had for a long time only six franchises there, and now there's seven. And with the exception of Montreal and Toronto, maybe Vancouver, but a lot of small markets too, like Edmonton, Calgary. Don't worry, they had the dominance for a long time. They'll get over it.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
I'm going to keep it nice and easy to get you warmed up here, okay?
Yeah.
Tell me just three of the Knicks starting five the last time they won a championship.
Dave DeBuscher, Walt Frazier, Bill Bradley.
You want to finish it out?
Earl Monroe.
Yep.
And Willis Reed.
I thought about Earl Monroe because you got the Pearl and Black Jesus, both.
By the way, the fact that Earl's not on the list invalidates the entire list.
Oh, stop!
But you should make a second list. That's the real list. Doc, Earl, Iron Mike. That's
baseball.
The list.
Louisiana Lightning.
Oh, God, that's a lot. All right.
You realize it's the top five, right? You got to make tough decisions.
Hey, Don.
Yes, honey.
Who's the Mets' all-time leader in games played?
The Mets' all-time leader in games played would have to be Ed Kranepool. Final answer.
I believe there's a drop that tells you the answer. The name at the top of the list when it comes to games played for the New York Mets would be...
Ed Kranepool!
All right, Kaser, let's keep it moving, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Michael Jordan and Bill Russell have...
How about Say Hey Kid for Willie Mays?
I thought about it, too. That was a tough call. I'm a big Willie guy.
Michael Jordan and Bill Russell...
We're going to need that, RJ. Thanks. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
A big Willie guy?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan and Bill Russell have each won five league MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not as many as this player who won it a record six times.
Oh, my goodness.
Jordan and Russell have five each. This guy has six.
LeBron.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh.
Oh. That would have been my guess, too, Michael. Don't feel bad.
And because Don went first, today's round is over. It goes to Donald LeGreca. Now, I have a question. Do you think, in terms of easy to hard, that was an appropriate start to the game?
Yeah, I should have gotten that.
Jabbar was gettable. That was it's
no,
not easy, but it's gettable.
I'm an embarrassment.
A disgrace.
That was
I'm less of an embarrassment than that previous list, but I'm still an embarrassment.
Again, who are you taking off, Michael?
I told you. There's a couple of people you could take off.
Who?
Tom Terrific is not a great nickname compared to the other ones.
It's a horrifying nickname.
But you give a score for the nickname and a score for the quality of player.
See, that's not what you said.
That's what I'm saying it now. That's how I formulate it.
Great.
So Louisiana Lightning's a tremendous nickname, better than Tom Terrific, but I think Tom Seaver was a better pitcher.
How about Duke Snider, the Duke of Flatbush?
Very good as well. This is top five. There's a lot
Say
of
Hey
nicknames.
Kid, there's no defense for not having Say Hey Kid. No defense.
But I thought about it. It wasn't like I forgot it.
Well,
hey, the Iron Horse isn't on the list. This is a tough top five, Michael. My 21st, by the way. Still, ample time.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
And now with another tale from the crib.
Come to my house, have a rib.
Here's Michael K.
All right, so it seems like most things that happen in my career, they're accompanied by some level of drama. So I was covering the New York Yankees for 2 years at the New York Post, 87 and 88. And I had been at the Post since I graduated from Fordham. So let's say 82, late 82. So I'd been there a while. It was home. And the sports editor of the Post was a very demanding guy. Greg Gallo, I spoke about him in the past. Demanding to the point that it could be unnerving, but I give him a lot of credit for my work ethic, Greg Gallo and my parents. Because it was never enough. You always had to make the extra phone call. He was a slave driver, and some people didn't handle it well. I liked working for him. I liked to be pushed. I just did. Well, I told you the story last week, or 2 weeks ago, about how Lupica had gone to the editor of the Daily News. His name was Jim Wilsey. You got to hire this guy. He's great. He works really hard. He breaks stories all the time. And make Bill Madden the baseball columnist. So Jim Wilsey makes me an offer at the end of the 1988 season. I mean, a really significant raise from what I was making at the Post. And the Post would never give you a raise for doing a good job. They gave you a raise if somebody was trying to steal you. So essentially, the Daily News was going to double my salary from the one at the Post. So I went in to Greg Gallo and I said, listen, I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave the Post. I'm going to go to the News. And he just started ripping me how I wasn't being loyal, that he had given me a shot. He had made me what I was. This was unbelievable. He couldn't believe that I was doing it. It was a terrible thing, blah, 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 blah. You didn't even give us a chance to match. I said, well, I before this offer came, I asked you for a raise 2 years in a row and you wouldn't give it to me. Well, now we'd have to give it to you. You didn't even give us a chance. I said, well, I don't want to play one side against the other. That's not fair either. He just aired me out. He was very, very disappointed in me. And that crushed me because I give a lot of my success. I give credit to him for a lot of my success. So then I go home and I get a call from the editor of the New York Post, a woman by the name of Jane Amsterdam. And she said, have you signed anything with the News yet? And I said, no. She said, would you please come into my office? So this is the highest level under Rupert Murdoch at the New York Post.
How much dealings had you had with her previously?
Hello. She was aware of my work and she was always very nice, but you know, day to day, hardly at all. So she calls me in and she says to me, I just want you to know a lot of people have trouble working for Greg Gallo. He's not going to be here anymore. We'll get rid of him. And I said, I'm not leaving because of that. And she said, well, I just want you to know we'll match and even beat what the Daily News is going to give you. And Gallo will not be here for you to have to deal with. Now I feel awful for Greg Gallo. I said, well, I hope you're not doing that because of me, because that's not the reason I'm leaving. So she goes, well, just think about it. We'll give you more money than the Daily News is offering you and Gallo won't be here. So Gallo sees me on the floor there and he calls me back into his office. And he starts ripping me about being disloyal to him. And I'm looking at him and going, this guy has no idea he's going to get fired. So then later that day, I have to go into the Daily News. So Jim Wilsey is the guy who offered me. He's the editor of the Daily News. And he wants me to go down and talk to the sports editor of the Daily News, a guy by the name of Bob Decker. So I'm sitting in Decker's office and I'm getting a really odd vibe. And he goes, you know what? Things are not always greener on the other side of the fence. I said, what? He goes, you know, coming here is not going to be the be-all, end-all for you. He goes, you know, maybe you should consider staying at the Post. I said, you don't want me to come here? I'm just saying things might be better at the New York Post than they are now. It might be the right thing to do and stay there. I said, I've given my word to Jim Wilsey. And he goes, well, you haven't signed anything yet. And then I'm thinking, this is awfully odd. The Daily News sports editor is essentially telling me not to come.
Right.
So I couldn't go back on my word to Jim Wilsey, who had made me this offer that was doubling my salary. So I went up at the Jim Wilsey's office, and I didn't tell him what Bob Decker had said. And I said, yeah, I'm going to take your offer, knowing that the Post was going to give me, because I just didn't want to be that guy going back and forth. He said, all right, we'll draw up the contracts. You come in tomorrow and sign them. Later that night, I find out that Bob Decker's been hired by the New York Post to be their sports editor. That's why he was trying to talk me out of it. So because I wouldn't play one end against the middle, I stayed with the Daily News. I stayed there for 3 years, and then I got the radio job. So that is my tale from the crib. Every move I made always seemed to be accompanied by some drama, some wow. angst and strum, but it worked out.
Wow. Were you bummed out when you realized that's what happened?
No, because I wasn't going to the Daily News for Bob Decker, per se. Jim Wilsey, who's a brilliant man, I think he's now a professor teaching journalism in Princeton. It was him. I mean, he kind of wined and dined me and, you know, wanted me to go there and felt, and again, the money to me, money that my dad had never made, and I never thought that I would make that. And I just said, I'm going to do that. So I wasn't going for Bob Decker.
Right.
I was just going
opportunity
to be a part
money.
Of the Daily News sports section and the money. And I felt badly about leaving Jane Amsterdam, who was always a great great boss. And then that Greg Gallo got fired. And I kept stressing to her, I am not leaving because of Greg Gallo. Do not fire Greg Gallo. But because Greg was abrasive with some of the writers and some of them were revolting, not me. They decided to get rid of him and bring in a friendlier version. And Bob Decker. So that's the story. Pretty wild stuff.
What a life. What a life.
And you wonder why I probably have holes in my stomach from ulcers. There's
now,
no
Jane
easy decision.
To Maury?
What was that?
Was Jane related to Maury?
She happened to his daughter. It was Maury Amsterdam's okay. daughter, yeah.
That's for the audience of a certain age.
What age?
Which is probably none. Not your age.
No, not your age.
Is it even your age?
Yeah, I know. Maury Amsterdam is from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Okay.
He was, you know, kind of a comedy writing team with Rosemary.
You'd know him if you saw him.
I don't think he would. I think that if he walked out of his building today to walk bare and Maury Amsterdam mugged him, he would have no idea who he was to tell the cops.
Yeah. We're not.
Is today Bear's birthday?
It's this general time. I don't know the actual day.
Well, that's
what a
that's
disgrace.
Kind of an animal's birthday.
This
well,
is your
a lot
child.
Of assumptions.
Well, he's there's adopted.
There's a lot of assumptions made when it
I
comes to
I think everybody
animals.
That adopts a child knows what their birthday is.
Yeah, well, but not everybody that that gives the animal up for adoption is completely sure. Oh, by the way, speaking of
he
birthdays.
He doesn't seem to like this. Barry,
happy
you want to say
first
hi?
Birthday to Bennett Brownsher.
That's right.
Bennett, little Bennett.
What a first year for Bennett.
Boy, you could tell,
like,
won't like
remember
Bear
it.
Wants no part of being on the air.
No, he doesn't like being held up like
you
that.
You know, when you hold him like that, it looks like Challenge the Insult Comic Dog.
Yeah.
He
not
does.
Challenge.
His
What's
ears.
His
ears.
Triumph. those were the best bits.
Oh,
Triumph
very
was very funny.
Shining Wizards Kevin tweets, I'm curious, since starting Tales from the Crib, have you had anyone challenge your recollection of the events of your stories?
Ooh.
No. Why would they? They're all true.
That's a very good point.
I think people are used to our segments being confrontational.
Well,
so they want. So instead of
Jane
debating
Amsterdam
my top five.
Could call in if she'd like. Greg Gallo can call in if he'd like. Rupert Murdoch if he'd like. But
wow.
These stories are all true. And they're spectacular.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.